Good afternoon, everybody. How are you all doing? Everybody doing okay? We so appreciate you coming. We know it's the last hour of the last workshop on the last day of the conference, which tells me that you're all committed to this and wanting to learn more. So thank you so much for joining us today to learn, actually together with us, about this massive problem of modern-day slavery in our world today. My name is Libby Swenson, and I'm on staff with Crew, and I have been smoking quite a bit this week, so let's have to excuse my voice. Actually, I've been talking a lot, and I scream at people that I haven't seen since, like, the last Crew 15, and so it kind of takes a toll on my vocal cords, so please excuse the smoker's voice that you're going to be getting today. So I serve with the Justice Coalition with Crew, and we are under the ministry called Gospel in Action, which is a strategic initiative within the campus ministry to help weave social concern into the posture and practices of our ministry. So basically what we want to do is to help win, build, send with love, compassion, and justice. In a world that is crying out and screaming for justice. And I know that you are all here today because I think the title is even compelling today. 46 million people in slavery changes everything. You know, I come to you today just feeling very sobered. I went home right after lunch today and went to my hotel and just wanted to take a break and eat some lunch, and I just flipped on to CNN, and you all may know this right now, but what has come out is last night in San Antonio, there was a big semi-truck parked at a Walmart, and it was discovered that 38 people were in this truck who had been trafficked into the United States, and so now the FBI is on it, taking care of it. 8 people were found dead, 30 probably, they said, will have severe brain injury for the rest of their lives because they were trafficked in. It's been 100 degrees in San Antonio, and right now, at least for us, we don't know how long they were sitting in that truck and even what those conditions were like. Apparently, the drivers of the truck ran into the woods as the police were trying to find out what was going on. And so it was just a sober reminder of the reality of our world today, the reality that 46 million people, 46 million image bearers of God are owned by somebody else, are coerced through fraud, are exploited, whether it's through sex trafficking, bonded slavery. 46 million people, which is more than any other time in all of history. The statistics also say that 2 million children are annually exploited in the global commercial sex slave trade. And when we are talking about this problem of human trafficking, we're talking about the fastest growing criminal industry in the world today, with net profits of $150 billion, which is more than the net profits of Nike, Google, Starbucks, the NFL, and Disney combined. These are the net profits of human trafficking annually. And so we as a ministry are saying, God, what is our place in this? And what does this look like? And today we're going to be hearing from a couple of other people. You may have seen in the ministry booth this week, International Justice Mission is one of our wonderful partners that we have with Crew, and you'll be hearing from Dan, who's going to explain more about the work of IJM. You're going to be hearing from Chandra, who's going to be talking about an initiative within Crew where we also are helping IJM in some of their work as well, too. You're going to be hearing about some other incredible ministries that we've got going on. But we also want this to be a time for you to talk together, because this is a workshop. So don't worry, we're not going to be just a bunch of talking heads up here. But I want to share just a little bit about what's going on. Our partnership with IJM started back in 2006, where we decided to come together and say, what can we do together organizationally to help end modern slavery in the name of Christ, to help win, build, and send with love, compassion, and justice. And there are many ways that that is played out. And I want to just share a small one with you. We have an incredible internship program now. Back in 2010, IJM and I got together and we created an internship program for Crew where somebody could come intern with our ministry on a campus, be trained with IJM in how to really get a biblical message of justice on campus. Whether it's through evangelism, whether it's through our discipleship program, whether it's through creating new summer mission opportunities. And so we've had, probably since 2010, we've had about 20 interns that have come through our program and that are just really helping their campuses to know Christ. We are now starting internships with City as well, too, where we are wanting to help reach the city for Christ through acts of justice. And I'm looking at Greg and Jeannie Gansel right here in the front. Their daughter, Lizzie, has been an intern with us for 2 years, and she now has finished her internship with Crew and is going to be moving to Asia with IJM for this next year, continuing her internship. And so what we would like to do right now is, if you could just get in twos and threes and just answer this question together. When you hear about this problem of modern-day slavery, when you hear about things that are happening right now in San Antonio, when you hear these statistics and these numbers, what does that stir in your heart? You might even want to answer the question, why did you even come today? What is it about this that makes you just say, I don't know, can you answer some questions? What can I do? So if you could just get in groups of twos and threes, we're going to discuss that together for about 5 minutes, and then we'll take it from there.
Thank you.
I'm glad you had a little bit of discussion together. I'm sure you feel like there's a lot more you can talk about as well, too. I'd like to introduce our buddy, Dan Mackett, has come all the way from Washington, D.C. Let's give him a big hand. Is living in Washington, D.C., serving with IJM as a college mobilization manager. And so we will be working very closely with our campus movements, even with our city movements. Dan's going to be sharing with you more about the work, the specific work of International Justice Mission, and giving you some opportunities to get involved. But I will say, you may already be saying this, Dan came up through CREW at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Give it up, right back here for some discipleship. Yeah. And so Dan, involved with CREW as a student, is now serving with IJM. And so take it away, Dan. Thanks.
Yeah, it's so good to be here with you guys. As Libby said, I went to University of Wisconsin, and Brandon Brooks right there discipled me for 2 years. So I'm very thankful for him. And even as I was listening to Jenny Allen last night, hearing her talk so passionately about her relationship with her disciple, I texted Brandon after, and I was just overwhelmed with Thanksgiving. And so it's been so good to be here for this last week. I felt like I've been a part of the CREW family, so I'm excited to see where this partnership's going to go. Libby introduced the reality that there's 46 million people still in slavery. And that number is kind of mind-boggling, and it's kind of hard to grasp. And so I wanted to tell two stories of clients that IJM has worked with. And so first I want to tell you about Godson. So Godson grew up in Ghana, and at 7 years of age, his mom wanted to give him a good education. And so she contacted her brother across the country and said, hey, will you take Godson in so he can go to school? And so, filled with hope, she sent him away to live with Godson's uncle in Accra, Ghana, where he hoped to get an education and give himself a better life. The first night when Godson got there, he was sleeping, and at 4 a.m. his uncle woke him up and took him straight to Lake Volta. Lake Volta is the largest man-made lake in the world, and the fishing industry is huge there. So at 4 a.m. he puts Godson in a boat, and for the next 10 years, 6 days a week, 12 hours a day, Godson is forced to work on that boat in super dangerous conditions. A couple of Godson's fellow children who were caught in slavery with him died because it was so dangerous. And so for the next 10 years of his life, Godson woke up every morning with no school, which he was promised, little to no food. His family was the one that was betraying him. He was just living in this reality. Thankfully, IJM was able to discover that Godson was being trafficked, and as they worked with local authorities, they were able to rescue him and bring him off the lake, return him to his mom, where he's received aftercare, counseling, and now is thriving. But for those 10 years, his mom thought he was going to school. His mom thought he was receiving an education to have a better life. But he was being trafficked. He was being abused day after day. I also want to tell you about Suhana. So when Suhana was 13 years old, she was trafficked in Kolkata, India. And as she was trafficked into a brothel there, for the next 3 years of her life, she spent that time in a brothel. 4 times a day for the weekdays, she would be sold to a customer, and then on the weekends up to 10 times per day. Day after day, night after night, she was being raped and abused by men who viewed her as nothing, who viewed her just as something to get pleasure from. Thankfully, IJM came in and was able to rescue her, where she was taken to an aftercare facility where she received counseling and healing. For the next year, she got a lot better. And IJM and the aftercare team was like, okay, now it's time to get a job that's sustainable in a safe area. Unfortunately, as she got out and she had a job, she made a relationship with someone who she thought would be a friend. Unfortunately, that friend ended up re-trafficking her all the way across the country to Mumbai, a huge city. When IJM found out about this, this was heartbreaking. So our team spent countless hours and days and months in pursuit of finding Suhana. They didn't have any real facts. That all they knew was that she got trafficked to Mumbai. And so, thankfully, the Lord ended up, through a set of miracles, ended up allowing IJM to rescue her, where now she's in a safe place. But the fact that she got re-trafficked was just unbelievably awful. So that is the story of these 45 to 46 million slaves that are in the world. That is their reality. Whether it's the little boys on Lake Volta, as young as 6, some of them work up to 18 hours a day, or the girls caught in the brothel, or the family in brick kilns in India. This is their reality. People made in the image of God getting abused as if they were nothing. So when I was at Passion 2012, that is when I was hearing these stories. That was when I was processing as a freshman, what was I going to do with my life? What was God calling me to? And the verse that stuck out to me at that conference was Hebrews 13:3, which says, "Remember those who are mistreated as if you yourselves are mistreated. And remember those who are suffering as if you yourself were suffering." And so as I thought about that verse, I was thinking about my childhood. When I was 7 years old, compared to God's son, the only care that I had in the world was which friend I was going to play with that day. What was I going to eat at lunch? I had everything. I had a loving family. I had education. I had health care. I played sports after school. God's son had the exact opposite. And so as I thought about that verse, I put myself in his shoes. And I was thinking about, okay, what does God really mean by remembering? Is it just to remember, feel bad, and then not do anything? No, throughout the Bible, whenever God says something to remember, it's always to be followed by an action. Whenever he told the Israelites to remember what God had done in the Old Testament, it was always so that they would be thankful and start getting back into worship, rather than grumbling and complaining to God about where they were at in life. And so, remembering is always followed by action. When Jesus remembered the state that we were in, separated from him, he looked for the joy set before him to endure the cross. And what did he do? He subjected himself to the greatest injustice by being crucified for the sake of us. And so now as believers, we have that same call to remember our brothers and sisters made in the image of God and to now do something, to put ourselves in their shoes and to think how we would want a believer across the world to come and rescue us. And so the vision of IJM, International Justice Mission, is to protect or to rescue millions, protect 500 million, and prove that justice for the poor is possible. Now this dream, this vision, is complicated, but over the last 20 years, God has blessed the model that we've put together in rescuing people. And so I want to tell you a little bit about what we do specifically. And so there's 4 things that we do. Number 1, as you heard, we rescue victims. We rescue these people caught in violent oppression. We work with the local authorities, oftentimes when we're first starting an office, to put together all the evidence saying, hey, these girls are in this brothel, they're being trafficked, they're as young as 10. We'll take it to the authorities, plan the rescue operation, and then actually rescue them. Then the next part is we restore them. And so we partner with aftercare shelters where they can get 1 to 3 years of intense healing, care, and love. Now, I want to share a quick story about my time at an aftercare shelter in the Philippines. When I was a junior in college, I got to go with IJM to the field. So we got to visit 2 of our field offices. And when I was in Pampanga, we got to visit a shelter for about 30 girls who had been rescued. And one of the most great forms of therapy for them is doing art. And so we were painting together. And I'll never forget this moment. I looked down at the girl next to me. She was about 13. She painted this beautiful flower, and underneath that flower, she wrote, "God loves me," and then a verse in 1 Timothy. And when I looked at that, it struck me, because for that girl, she had every right and every right to say, no, I haven't experienced that in my lifetime. I've experienced such darkness, such abuse. She was living in the exact opposite of that reality. But for her to have been rescued and now to have in her own freedom say, "God loves me," she's experienced the gospel in such an unbelievable, transformative way. And in that moment, I was like, I could not help but just worship Jesus for how powerful the gospel was in that moment. And so when we're talking about restoring survivors, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about not only the physical, the emotional, but we're talking the spiritual aspect. If we don't rescue these people, chances are they're not going to hear the gospel. And so we need to take that call very seriously. The next part of our model is actually bringing the criminals to justice. So the question that we need to ask ourselves is, in our modern society, why are there still 45 million slaves? When in every country slavery is illegal, why is it still so rampant? And the basic fact is that laws are just not enforced. Throughout the world, justice systems are so broken that laws are not being enforced. And because of that, criminals can get away with anything. In India, you're more likely to be struck by lightning and killed than you are to be convicted of owning a slave. Think about that. You're more likely to be struck by lightning and killed than to be convicted of owning a slave. And so the most important piece in making sure that we can stop slavery and end it is actually following through with bringing the criminals to justice. And this process can take a long time. A lot of our cases, even though we've rescued them, our lawyers and our social workers will walk alongside our clients for up to 6 years to make sure that that criminal gets put in slavery so they can't do the same thing that they did to one of our clients. So over the last 20 years, we've been able to convict 1,200 people and put them in prison, which is amazing because then that protects so many more people and it ensures that our clients are able to heal because they're not scared that they're going to be re-trafficked by the same person. Imagine that now you're out of trafficking, but just down the street you know that that person who abused you for years is still roaming free. That cannot happen. And so as we're walking through the trials and ensuring that criminals get actually put in prison, we're actually working to strengthen the justice systems. A lot of times in the developing world, justice systems don't have the processes and procedures that we have and we benefit from in the U.S. I'm not saying that the U.S. system is perfect. It's far from perfect. But compared to what the stat I just shared in India, we're doing a lot better. And so we're able to identify specific processes, do specific trainings, so that we can actually strengthen the justice system and it can operate on its own. Actually, in the Philippines, as we worked with law enforcement over 10 years, we saw an 80% reduction in girls that were available for sex because we kept following through. We kept rescuing, we kept restoring, and we kept ensuring that the criminals were prosecuted. And so that works. If a trafficker knows they're likely to be convicted, they're not going to do it. And so that is such an important piece, not only for protecting and rescuing people from slavery, but also for every other development initiative. You know, our founder, Gary Haugen, in the book, The Locust Effect, talks about how if you build a school for girls somewhere, because education can help alleviate them from poverty, which is true, but they're at risk of being raped on the way to school, and so they're scared and don't actually go to school, then what good does that school do? But if they don't live in that fear because the laws are being enforced and they know they're going to be protected by their justice system, then that school does what it's supposed to. And so that is what IJM does. We rescue victims, we restore them, we bring criminals to justice, and then we strengthen the justice system. And so today, IJM's vision is to follow God's heart to seek justice for the oppressed, for the orphan, for the widow. And we want to see the church respond seriously to this call. We want to see every person remember, and not just remember, but remember and act, just as Christ did on our behalf. And so as the college mobilization manager for IJM, I'm working with Libby to mobilize students to understand this reality, to understand God's care for them, and then actually do prayer, fundraising, and advocacy on their campus. And so we're going to talk a little bit later about specific ways that you guys can get involved with us. But right now, as we transition, I'd love for you guys to just take 30 seconds to a minute and just think about what God's stirring in your heart. What is he telling you as you hear these stories and as you think about his call to remember and to act? And then feel free to share with the person sitting next to you about what God is stirring. And then we'll come back in a couple minutes.
close your conversations. Well, welcome. Eugene Cho challenged us a few days ago in Moby to let the things that break God's heart break our heart. Remember that? And then what did he say? He said, look people in the eye, right? Because Jesus always looked people in the eye. And immediately when he said that, I just was transported back to Italy where we lived for a good decade with Crew. And remembered driving from Florence to the Chianti region along country roads, and we'd always take shortcuts because we knew the way, and seeing girls every 100 yards along the country road and looking away and telling people in the car to look away. And because I didn't understand. And I thought a lot of things that we have, misconceptions we have about that, what that means. And then I remembered the day when I actually looked the girl in the eyes and I saw God's image and it broke my heart. And so I'm Native American, I'm kind of a warrior, and so immediately I went home and I'm like, we've got to do something, what is going on? I started asking questions and I found out that Italy is actually one of the number one destination countries in Europe because of all the poor, the power imbalance, all the poor countries around Italy. So think Romania, Albania, even Nigeria, lots of women and girls and even boys coming up from Nigeria. And they're lured to Italy. I'm sure you all know how it works, but they're lured to Italy with the promise of a job or work. And by the way, and anyway, who doesn't want to go to Italy, right? So it's not that hard. And then they get there, of course, and they wind up being sold on the side of the road. And so I kind of went into warrior mode, and I was like, well, who's doing something about this, and how can we join them? And sadly, most people were looking away at that point. So I just started saying, we've got to find someone who's doing something. And so you can imagine when I found out about International Justice Mission, how incredibly excited I was. And then even more exciting is when we transitioned back to the States, I found out that this partnership had been formed. And people were like, you got to call Libby, you know? So I called Libby and we started working together, and we really started, I know, in my heart, the burden really was, what could we do that's, a really great partnership that we could connect college students in? Because I was speaking on college campuses, and then they're like, what can we do? And so we jumped on a trip. Actually, Shayna Kramer's here. I called my friend Shayna, and they said, come on. And so they were going to India, taking some students over on a spring break trip. And we got to India, and I met with Saji Philip, who is now the field office director for IJM's South Asia office. And I remember sitting with Saji, and he tells me now, I don't know what came over me, must have been the Holy Spirit. But he moved me to tears, really, as he told me stories about the girls they were rescuing. Because the first couple years, they were just getting systems in place and hadn't seen anyone being rescued. But as he told me those stories, he turned and he looked me in the eye. And he said, Chandra, we are running out of aftercare space. Will you help us? And then you kind of bob your head for a yes, And I'm like, is he saying no? But he said, will you help us? And I'm like, what do you have in mind? And of course, I'm involved in the States by now. And I'm like, okay, $1 million for the building. $1 million for 24/7 care. And he said, well, I said, well, what do you have in mind? And he said, well, I have these nuns. And they run alongside us on rescues. And then they go to court with the girls. And then they have a house they want to take them to expand our aftercare capabilities. Will you help them? And again, I was thinking, I'm just this, crew staff person. I don't know what to do. And so I said, yes. Like I usually do. Thank God for my husband. He's usually. And I said, well, yes. Then kind of, inside I'm like, I hope I can deliver. What do you need? And he goes, we need toilets. And I said, oh, toilets. We can do that. Because they were at the phase where they needed one, they needed to comply with one toilet for every 7 girls, and they didn't have enough toilets to expand. So they actually needed a lot more than toilets, but we started there. And the partnership that has formed and the things that students have been able to do, and we've been able to build, I'll tell you about that later, but a room for them to study and eat in has been amazing. But I said, well, I think I should meet the nuns. And so 2 days later, I sat down with Sister Lizzie, and she looked me in the eyes. And she said, Shandra. And she actually held out her hands. And so I took her hand, and she said, will you tell your friends to join us in rescuing these little ones? And I said, yes, I will. And so on the plane back, and I'm going to tell my husband, he's my friend, and he's going to talk to me about this crazy idea, you know? And so I got back, and he's usually really sensible, you know? And I got back and said, Sean, here's what's going on. What do you think? And he said, let's do it. Not even a minute hesitation. I'm like, no, you were supposed to talk me out of it. And so then I called Bonnie, my best friend from college. Stand up. I want you just to know her because she took all these pictures on the table, which I'll tell you what to do with in a minute. And she didn't talk me out of it either, but she said, I'm in. And so on our next trip together, she's a photographer, and she took these amazing photos, which we actually do traveling shows with. And she made this video that we want to show you really quick. And then I'll tell you what to do. So Eric's going to help us out there. But what's really great as he's starting that about these photos as you start to interact with them is that we have to hide their identity. So they really
every
show.
Every evening, one girl is missing. Even as we talk, somebody is gone.
This is Saji.
A girl went, was going to school. Some women went behind her and made the poisonous gas to smell, and she became unconscious. And in 24 hours' time, she was in another place almost 150 kilometers away. And on that night, they took everything to destroy their teeth. Cigarette butts are burned and put into their. Metal parts are pierced into their fiber parts just to destroy their dignity. After 5 to 6 years of trauma, now they are not in demand. So they grew older, now they are sick. So they have to come out in the open to fetch custom. But the inner ones, you see them, you can't see them. That is why I am passionate about IGM because we are passionately going after the minors. We wanted to bring them back into the mainstream of life, giving them skills and opportunity to live a life of dignity and sisters, adorers, just jumped to their feet and said, we are ready to start. We exist for this.
I could have been one of the trafficked girls, so it made me to go into this. And I thought, even at the cost of my life, if one is saved, I need to save that
to have a skilled training center so that the girls who cannot go out can learn their beautician course, computer training, health literacy program, then maintainer, we can help them so that they can stand on their foot and they can have a decent life with a dignified life.
Lots of different collaboration with this, and also you can contact Bonnie to have her photos brought to your campus, and we'll tell you a little bit more about that. But right now, you know, just really take a few minutes to grab a picture and interact with someone around you, and pick a word or a phrase that comes to mind. And I just do want to say, sometimes this can kind of trigger some things, depending on who you are and where you come from. So just really take care of yourself right now, too, with the beauty and the hope that you see in these pictures, and talk to me if you know that's happened to you. We don't want to really leave anyone there. So take a few minutes.
If you don't have a picture on the table, you can interact with the ones on the wall too.
Yeah.
Or the paintings in front of
us. Yeah. There's stories. If you have time at the end, like Bonnie said, there's stories on the wall with each of the pictures.
Gotten to process kind of what the situation we're in, and even as you just hear about more of the stories, thanks, Chandra, for sharing. We want to move into a time of, okay, what can we do? As the body of Christ and those of us in the room that are with Crew, what can we do? And so one thing I want to say is that, so in 2007, our founder, Gary Haugen, set the vision, we want to rescue thousands, protect millions, and prove that justice for the poor is possible. We've reached that goal. We've been able to rescue 40,000. We're protecting 21 million globally. And that model that I was talking about, great, like glory be to God that is working. But now that we're moving to our 2030 vision of rescue millions, protect half a billion, and make justice for the poor unstoppable, that's going to take all of us. That's going to take every single follower of Christ to say, yes, I'm going to play at least some part in this fight. And so just as the traffickers who are making $150 billion are bringing everything they've got to keep this going, we need to say yes to bring in everything that we've got. And so now we're going to talk about a couple things which you guys can directly get involved with. So Libby's going to start us off with that.
You know, you may be wondering this. You know, when you hear things like this, you might be thinking, what is my piece of the pie in all of this? What does this look like for me? And I really wish that my husband, Rob, could be here today because his story, to me, is very powerful. I remember several years ago, back in 2006, when I began talking to him about this problem of human trafficking, and this is how he shares his story as well. He just said, there's no way. There is no way that men do that to children. That's impossible. But he began reading books. He began watching IJM videos, and he started really just diving into Scripture. He spent 2 years studying Isaiah 58, which talks about loosening the chains of injustice, is what a true fast is. And he was just praying and asking God, how can I be involved? And he's not on staff. He's in real estate. Asking God what could he do for his piece of the pie in this whole problem of helping to end modern-day slavery. One summer, we were up in Vail, Colorado, and they were having an art gallery, and we walked all through it, and he saw this lady painting a picture of this woman from Rwanda, and it was just this beautiful picture with all of the wrinkles and all of the lines in her face, and he began talking to her, and he said, what is this? And she said, my husband and I have a ministry in Rwanda with widows, and I paint the portraits of these women to tell their stories. And it was as if a light bulb came on in his head, and he said, what if I could somehow start a ministry of painting portraits of people who've been rescued from trafficking? And so now, 10 years later, we have 200 oil paintings from portrait artists all across the world. He has started his own 501c3 called Freedom 58. You see two of the portraits right here. This is a traveling art exhibit, and in this, with Freedom 58, we're partnering with just these incredible ministries who are also helping to rescue and restore and litigate against those who are trafficking young children. And so Freedom 58, with this art exhibit, travels to churches. It travels to houses of legislature. We were just in the state of Montana for the month of January, meeting with the Attorney General, giving press conferences, being in the newspaper. And so he has found his niche in this. And so I feel so encouraged about that because we can all be involved in some way. And would you believe that even through this art ministry, we've actually been able to start a brand new summer mission with crew to Cambodia. We just had a team come back, and they are serving in Cambodia, students and interns. And so I just think it's such a beautiful picture of what does it mean to collaborate together, and how can I use the gifts and abilities that God has given me to help transform and change the world. And so Dane is going to share a little bit specifically about what you can do as well too.
So this fall, we're going to be putting on a campaign called Freedom Fast. I'm going to pass this around so everybody can grab one. So Freedom Fast, so in Isaiah 58, God says to the Israelites, is this not the kind of fasting I've chosen to loose the chains of injustice, untie the cords of the yoke, and set the oppressed free? And really what he's getting at is, he's like, are you going to integrate worship and justice? Are you going to allow this injustice to thrive in your midst, or are you going to integrate worship and justice? And so the vision of Freedom Fast is to have 100 campuses and churches all to fast and pray for 24 hours, and then everybody gives $24 from the money that they would have spent on food towards raising $100,000. $100,000 can fund 13 rescue operations around the world through IJM. And so more than that, more than the money raised, we really want to see people really deeply connect with Jesus on this issue. Especially for me as a student, we did this about 5 years ago, and that was such a transformative time for the leadership team and I, as we led, because we had never fasted before. And so just to practice that spiritual discipline and really understand God's heart more fully in this, that's really our hope as well, that students and church members would connect with Jesus on a much deeper level and then take this as that first step to say, yes, Lord, I'm going to respond to your call. And so we're launching a website and a whole campaign toolkit mid-August. And so my email is on the back of there. If you just want to email me, and I'll send you the link once that's ready. Otherwise, it'll be on ijam.org website mid-August as well. So if you have any questions after, please come talk to me.
And lastly, we want to talk about one incredible opportunity to get involved. IJM has an annual global prayer gathering. It's been going on for many, many years now, actually for almost 20 years. We're all partners and donors and prayer warriors are gathered together to pray about this problem of modern-day slavery and violent oppression of the poor. Well, IJM announced just this last February that for 2018, they are really going to scale up the global prayer gathering for the fall of 2018. Included in this, for IJM's 20-year anniversary as an organization, they are bringing in every single field staff for this prayer gathering and for a staff conference. So all of the staff overseas, whether it's Asia, Africa, Latin America, wherever it is, whether you're an investigator, whether you're an attorney, whether you're an aftercare worker, every person is going to be brought in, people who've never been to the United States before. And when IJM said, this is what we want to do, I said, crew would love to help. And then I contacted crew and I said, can we help with this conference? John Rogers, obviously our chief of staff, his response was immediate. He said, we're in. What can we do to help? And so crew is going to be helping to run IJM's staff conference next year for all of their field staff. So imagine being a part of a conference where thousands of people are gathered to fast and to pray and beseech God on behalf of those who are violently oppressed in our world today. This weekend, we brought in the IJM conference staff to just shadow our whole operations team. And let me tell you, it has been incredible. They've gone around with our team, with our design team, and they said, you know, we've been invited to so many conferences and we've worked with so many people. Nobody has been as gracious and kind and as hospitable as crew has. And so we are so thankful that crew wants to be a part. And I introduced them to Steve Douglas, just shared the vision with him about what we're going to be doing next year to help with their conference. And I loved his response. Steve Douglas just opened his arms wide and he said, anything that you need, we are here to serve you. And isn't that just such a beautiful expression and picture of partnership and really what it means to transform God's kingdom together? I know we're almost out of time, but we want you to know that we've got some flyers here about the art ministry. We have all of Bonnie's photos right here, and you may want to take some time to walk around and read about the photos, read about the pictures. You can read some flyers. If you want to know more about our Justice Coalition, you can just go to crew.org/justice, and it tells a little bit about the work that we are wanting to accomplish together. And so I don't know if we have any time, but if we would, we probably have time for maybe one or two questions that we could probably field. But if you, so I'll take a second to see if anybody has a question, and if you don't, that's fine. If we do, we'll just do like one or two, but afterwards we're going to be available. We'd love to talk to you. Yeah, did you have
one more thing? Can I just say, we have a website if you want to share that video. It's called houseoflightindia.com. You can talk to me or someone else, but House of Light or Bonnie or Sean or Shana. Houseoflightindia.com has a giving button too, but you can be feel free to use that website, and just got
launched,
so we'll be adding stuff to it. So
does anybody have a question?
Yeah, there's an email on here.
Oh, you got it? It's in the first, it says like 7-1 on the far right side. It's in that last.
Got it.
Sorry, I
got
that.
If you've got.
Okay. Any? Yes, right over here.
Are there any signs to like be aware of for sex trafficking in our areas?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I think a lot of people ask those kinds of questions. Chandra, also feel free to chime in as well, too, or Dan as well, too. I would, one, immediately contact the police. I would say that would be the first and foremost. You also might want to find in your community, are there any centers? You know, I know there are organizations that are statewide that help fight against trafficking. You can find that out for your state. You can also find that out from your city. You can find out that information from your local police department as well, too. Chandra, if you want to touch base,
I'm on the spot signs. Portland and have been. Usually vulnerable teens. So the movie Taken isn't that really realistic, but it's usually vulnerable teens. And so usually if a girl will start missing school, a lot of times their boyfriend, and you know about the Romeo pimps, right? That a girl will start to believe there'll usually be an older guy that'll come in. And so I have teens working in our high school, and they look for if their friends start dating an older guy that picks them up for lunch, mm-hmm. and they don't come back the rest of the day. Or if they start showing up to school with really expensive stuff, because what happens at first is the guy tries to make these teens, hey, they're not getting love at home. They're not getting these things at home. And so they know and provide all of those things for the girls. In fact, they go to malls, they go to schools, they go to any place that teens are hanging out when there should be a home, and train stations. And we interviewed our Portland police trafficking, interviewed a pimp in jail, and he said, you know, I can tell within 1 minute if I've got the girl. You know, when I tell her she's pretty and she looks down, like he can see if they're vulnerable, if they're susceptible. So, but you can actually Google that. Those are just some things. There is a whole list of signs. And what's real exciting is we got it in the curriculum at school. And so the best prevention is to train teens. So anyone in the high school ministry here? Oh my gosh, Rocket! Train schools, the schools opened up the doors to us. Train teens to watch their friends. Because teens are the best ones to see those kind of signs. And there's more, but I should probably stop.
And Polaris Project is one of the largest organizations in the U.S. They have a hotline that if you see anything, I actually had to use this in D.C. 2 months ago when I just moved there. Two little boys were probably being trafficked on the train. It's a longer story I can share later. But Polaris Project, they also have a lot of resources on training materials for that question. So check them out.
Call 911, though. I mean, I've called the Polaris thing, so that's great, but if you're really in a situation, you've got someone right there, you call them.
And if you are in any cities where our inner city staff are, many of our inner city staff are also working with some local anti-trafficking organizations as well, too, so excellent question. One more question, if we don't have one, that's fine, too, because I know our time is up as well.